And you just come meet him and go there.
Alright, we sit on the 20th anniversary of Chof Chesir, the Yom Yerushalayim, and we are faced by a startling curiosity. It's compelling, especially for us who were here last month at Iyar, when we were learning something about Shemitah, and the Tshuva was written on the very day that Rav Kook wrote it 60 years ago, 70 years ago, on the very day that we were learning. It was Beis Iyar. What a strange and compelling curiosity it is to note that his lifelong dream of coming on Aliyah was realized when he arrived in Yafo on Chof Ches Iyar in the year 5664. Okay? That's what compels me to leave Shemitah, although we are in no way done with it, and come to this. Furthermore, it is that compelling curiosity that changes the entire format of all of the previous shiurim that I've given. Either we've dealt with philosophy that he himself has written, hashkofa, or we dealt in halacha, or we dealt in both. None of that will you find in what I've reprinted here. The Sefer is by one of his devotees, Reb Chaim Lifshitz, who spent the last years of his life as an educator advancing the knowledge and writing for Sforim about the approach, the unique approach of Rav Kook to everything. And I took that Sefer, which is nothing more than a Sefer of thousands of vignettes from eyewitness accounts of people who had dealings with Rav Kook. There are so many who have crossed his path, and they have recorded the unique reactions that the man would display throughout all of these dealings, and that I went ahead reading through the chapter just when he arrived in Yerushalayim. That's all. Because that's where he becomes the so-called chief rabbi. And I've extracted them in subject matter. About a half a dozen subjects I didn't even enter into tonight's conversation, because we're going to just be able to touch some of the items. The reading is generally easy. It is certainly not the flowery Rav Kook. It is a very simple Ivrit. And let's see what we can get from it. Every one of the pages, beginning with page 2, I have numbered the vignettes, each one by its own number, and that's how I will refer to it. Let's begin with a very famous story, which indeed occurred. It had to do with a rich Jew who lived in Denver, Colorado. Now, Denver, Colorado, in those days, had such a beautiful atmosphere high up in the mountains without pollution that it was the center for sanitariums, especially those that catered to ones with respiratory diseases. Tuberculosis did not have any medication, and you only needed healing. You had no medication. Denver had a very famous such place. Asthma and all other breathing disorders, till this very day, are treated in Denver, and there is a massive Jewish hospital over there for it. The man comes and he wants to invest in Eretz Yisrael. And he asked Rav Zev Gold, who was one of the leaders of Mizrahi in a Talmud par excellence, to introduce him to Rav Kook, and so he did. After talking with the Rav to see what the story is, the Rav tells this Denver citizen, Yivarechecha Hashem Mitzion, may the Ribbono Shel Olam send his blessings to you from Tzion, Ure'e Betuv Yerushalayim, and always see the good of Yerushalayim. I'm on about the fifth line. And said Rav Kook that Lav Kol Adam Zochel Eros Betuv Yerushalayim, not every single person is capable of seeing the good, the pure of Yerushalayim. And there are those who only find fault with it, and as a result of finding fault, go out and publicize it no differently than the Meraglim speaking evil against the land. And my bracha to you is that you should see the good in Yerushalayim. So the Denver Jew was totally taken aback by this bracha, could not figure out immediately what was being said. And Rav Gold, with whom he shared his consternation, said, listen to me carefully. He says, there are many people who have nisyonos, who have tribulations that are very difficult. And we find this very great problem with those who come to visit from Chutz La'aretz, who come here. And he knows, Rav Kook knows exactly what he is saying. Now, a while later, the man comes to say goodbye to Rav Kook. And in the midst of saying goodbye, he complains bitterly about the Chilul Shabbos that he saw in Eretz Yisrael. He says, I looked all around. I had my eyes open. I see nothing but the abrogation of Torah. Rav Kook listens, and he keeps quiet. And then asks him, tell me, how can you go back to Denver? He says, what do you mean, how can I go back to Denver? He says, there's so many sick people over there. Isn't that the place wherever tuberculosis is contracted, that that's where they send the patients? And you are going back to a place that has such a pernicious disease, and it's all around in Denver, and that's where you live. How can you go back? So the man started to explain to Rav Kook, well, the reason that there are so many TB patients and others in Denver is because specifically of the unusual air and atmosphere in Denver. And it's there to heal the sick. He says, Shmane oznecha mashepicha medaveh, why don't you go ahead and let your ears hear what your mouth has just said? You're yelling about the sickness of Chilul Shabbos, you're yelling about the sickness of the abrogation of Torah. Where is there an avira, where is there an atmosphere purer, more beneficial and more potent to be able to heal this sickness than here? If Eretz Yisrael can't do it, nowhere else in the world can do it. Whereupon the man obviously was struck, the likes of which he never in his life was struck. And Rav Kook continued and said, look, things are bad now, they are sick now, but does that mean that the children of the sick ones have to remain sick? Because someone has tuberculosis, does that mean his grandchildren will have tuberculosis? The man will be cured, but the children at least will be totally, totally unaffected. The last paragraph in this item, Horid HaDenveri Esrosho, the man, this Denverite goes ahead and puts his head down in shame and promised that he would never again malign Eretz Yisrael, understanding clearly Ure'e Betuv Yerushalayim. If only we can see a perspective of good, that with all of its problems, there is still no place like Eretz Yisrael to solve our problems of Yiddishkeit. It is quintessential Rav Kook. There are no two ways about it. As far as Yerushalayim is concerned,
you could repeat that scenario. I mean, like, there's so many times he's talking about. You could pick somebody today from Denver, and they come and say the same thing.
These are universal vignettes They are probably applicable in every generation and in every sviva of today and yesteryear. And this is the point. This is the genius of the man.
But I never understood the Meraglim before, this story.
Okay.
That's a different terms.
Yerushalayim harim savivla. We say in the Shir HaMalos, in Tehillim, Yerushalayim, they are mountains that surround it. That we know. Kishechazar harav bilvias mekorovav meAmerica Yerushalayim. He was in England, and from England.
What's the second part of that?
Habdabrim bisfas kodesh brura. Oh, the mountains speak to him in a very clear Hebrew. Hmm. You see, you'll soon see.
Is this a quotation? Is it a
quotation? No. You'll see. Just wait. When Rav Kook came back from America, to which he went for, to drum up support from America for the entire Zionist cause, he returned from places that he had seen which were very high in altitude. They were in the mountains. And this is what he said. Amnam, indeed, gam sham ba'America ra'iti ha'harim gedolim v'nisayim. I saw some very high mountains in America. Ma'aseh Hashem adon kol ha'aretz. There are no two ways about it, that it was the same Ribono shel Olam who made those mountains as who made the mountains around Yerushalayim. But they don't talk to us, the Jew, like these mountains of Yerushalayim. Kan, shemedabrim elenu b'safa brura. You walk on the mountains and you hear voices, and you hear clear voices. Obviously, the kedusha of Bnei Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael. And if you just take a look at number 5, this is something which Rav Huttner, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin, a man who was a contemporary of all of our Rosh Yeshivas, who just died a few years ago. I knew him well, most of my life. So he says over there, Rav Huttner says, "Tiyalti im harab beharim v'imanu od mishu." I used to go walking with him. Rav Huttner was a bocher at that time.
Is he pael?
Rav Huttner. When Rav Huttner was a bacher, Rav Huttner learned in Hebron. We'll see. We have at least a half a dozen quotes from Rav Huttner.
Really?
Yeah. You see, and again, I want to belabor this point for you. Just as I know Rav Huttner, and you could have known him, and your path could have crossed his path, and he's telling you all of what he lived through with Rav Kook. All the others of these mises, almost with no exception, are first-hand accounts, are eyewitness accounts of what went on, of what was said. So, Hitpael Harav Meharim, he would go walking in the mountains, and obviously was around Yerushalayim, and he would go, he would just go wild with his lavus, with ecstasy. Ishaloha Ish, the third one who was there, said to Rav Kook, Hare Kvodoha Yaba Alpim, Mama Pele Baharim Elu, you in the Alps, far more impressive than the mountains of Yerushalayim. Is Heshiv, so he says, yeah, Taki, you're right, Zenachon. Ha'harim ha'eim lo dibru elai. But those mountains, the Alps, don't talk to me. These mountains talk to the Nefesh HaYehudis, talk to the soul, to the Jewish soul. Now, that's Yerushalayim. What do you say about Tel Aviv? I must tell you clearly that after my 13 and a half months, or 13 and three quarters months in Yerushalayim and Eretz Yisrael, I never got used to Tel Aviv. I malign Tel Aviv terribly. Its weather, its filth, the society, the worst of Paris, Rome, and New York all put together. Mm-hmm. That's because I'm not Rav Kook. Take a look at number 4. What he was interested in Tel Aviv. Okay? Professor Moshe Zilberstein, famous mind, came to Eretz Yisrael for the first time. It was around Chanukah time. I'm sorry, around Shavuot's time. Tofresh Sadi Dalet. That's 5,694. Okay, so it's 47. 47 in 6 years ago is 51 years ago. And he had his doubts whether he would take up permanent residence in Eretz Yisrael. And he came to Rav Kook and asked him what he should do as far as the second day of Yom Tov, because he really doesn't know whether he's staying. So the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, Rav Kook, Rav Horalo, Sheshitaso Bazeh, that his shita is to go lechumra, lekanu lekan, what we call a day and a half. The chumra is the hainu lahaniach tefillin kebiyom chol, and you're not allowed to miss a day of tefillin. And lo lasos melocha kebiyom tov, but nonetheless not to do melocha, and that's a chumra on both ends. Okay. Toch kedei sicha, as he was telling him this, so Rav Kook asks him over Tel Aviv hayamar, did you visit in Tel Aviv? Is yivaker b'Tel Aviv? Okay. He says, when you go there, keep your eyes open, and you should know that when they were starting to build the Bivinyana of Tel Aviv, which I believe was 1919 when they started Tel Aviv, and I gave a bracha birchas kohanim to those who started to build, is amar li mishu min hakanaim, one of the frum kanaim, the extremists, said to me, et mi mevarech mar, what are you wasting your bracha on them in Tel Aviv, those nothings? V'halo afilu bet kneset lo yasimu b'makom hazeh, they're not even going to build a shul, it's not in the initial plans. Ka'ez baruch Hashem, now he says, yesh meot batei knesiot b'Tel Aviv. Okay? Hundreds of shuls in Tel Aviv. How many cities in the world have hundreds of shuls? You see, a perspective, a way of thinking, or a betuv, that there could have been nothing, nothing was expected, and there are hundreds of shuls. Okay?
If I could just interject, I'm glad that we read this. I mean, this really is a very strong talk about it, really, someone's emotional feelings for Jewish life.
This is all emotion.
Because what I've been, you know, Baruch Hashem, since 1977, I've gone every other year to Eretz Yisrael. You know, we're going next week. And people think that I'm a sugar. People don't understand what I tell them. I try to express to them my feelings of being in Jewish life. People think that I'm either making it up or just totally off the wall.
I'm going to ask you a question, and please don't snap to a judgment. Do you always need the approval of people for what is important to you? Okay? Now, I will give you Rav Kook's answer to what I just said. All right? We'll get to it. What can you do? I'm here only to present a picture of the man. The man has changed my entire perspective on everything. You see. I want to share it with you. It fits. Where? Take a look, for instance, at his perspective in number 7 on this page.
What?
Yeah.
When you first talked about the rich man coming to Yerushalayim, you have the microphone on.
Denverite.
Remember, right, I'm not going to mention any names, but the famous Kohen in our shul who has an emotional gut reaction to anything about Israel. And it's a gut, you could wake him up when he's sleeping, I'm sure, and ask him his opinion about the government of Israel or whatever, and boom, it'll explode. In the same way that it looks like Rav Kook has another emotion that I don't know if he thinks about it each time. It's sort of ingrained in him, I guess, that he lives it, he breathes it, he is it. It doesn't seem to be a thought-out thing, but just a built-in thing. In the same way, I don't know what the difference is.
There is none, except that Cook was capable of expressing his
controllable love for anything and everything that ever is fine in a less volatile fashion. Of course, got disturbed when things were going wrong. Mm-hmm. And he expressed that disturbance in no uncertain terms. We'll learn about it. If not tonight, Bimil Hashem, next Rosh Chodesh. But no one is going to tell me any differently because I've studied the man whom you are talking about, and that's the other one, not Rav Kook. That other Kohen is a total lover of Eretz Yisrael. Now, why he is yelling is because out of love he hates to see it destroy itself. And most people don't understand it. Most people would rather go around with a Pollyannish smile and everything is hunky-dory, everything is okay, and don't talk, don't say a word. Okay? If ever that changes, I will be the first to muzzle him permanently. The man has put his money there, the man has invested his life there, the man reads and knows, he's not always right, evaluates, and wants only one thing, an ideal Eretz Yisrael. The man speaks the same thought patterns that Nevi'im spoke when they yelled and screamed at Bnei Yisrael. The reason that they yelled and screamed at Bnei Yisrael is because they were Bnei Yisrael. If they were a bunch of nothings, they wouldn't have wasted their energy. That's the issue. Again, take a look at perspective and meaning of what Eretz Yisrael means. On page 2, number 7, new settlements were coming up every single day in the times of Rav Kook. He went to Magdiel, a new Moshava, and they were there to plant trees, you know, Tu Bishvat style, to plant trees. They went ahead in Magdiel, and they gave him the honor to plant the first, what do they call it? The Shatil, the first sapling. They gave him, obviously, a hoe, a shovel. He went ahead, and he took the shovel and he throws it down. And he starts to go to grovel at the land with his own 10 fingers. So Abzev Gold, who was there, looks at him, and he sees suddenly on Rav Kook's face that it's turning red with fire. He is so full of emotion, and he starts to shake out of that emotion. He puts the sapling into the ground like, I don't know, like with such awe, with such overpowering fright, as if he was a Kohen Gadol standing in the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Gold was obviously confused and asked him, what was so emotional? My God, I mean, it was a little tree and you were planting it. What happened? We plant trees, hundreds of them, every single day. It wasn't a once-in-a-lifetime occurrence. Analo harav, so Rav Kook answers, Be'et she'achasti et haneta harach bi'adi. When I was holding that sapling in my hand, niskarti b'divrei chazal ala pasuk, I learned the pasuk, and remembered the pasuk that says in Devarim, acharei Hashem elekechem telechu, follow, walk in the ways of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, bo tidvakun, and cling to Him. So the Gemara says, V'chi yashar lebasar v'adam la'alot la'shamayim li'davek v'ashchina? Can you go ahead and cling to the Shechina? Because the Shechina, oto shekatub bo, ki Hashem elokecha eish ochla, the Ribono shel Olam is a consuming fire. How can you cling to it? Ela? So the Gemara says, mitchilas, it's actually in the Medrash, mitchilas b'riyaso shel Olam lo nitasek tchila. We're not going to go ahead and worry about the fire, but rather we are going to worry about what the Ribono Shel Olam did, and what did he first do? Vayita Hashem Elokim Gan Be'eden. He went and he planted a Gan Eden. That was one of the first things that the Ribono Shel Olam did, so to speak, to settle the world. Afatem Kishenichnasim La'aretz, says the Medrash. So too you, If you're worried about clinging to the Rabbanu Shalom, just do imitatio Dei, imitate what the Rabbanu Shalom did. Don't worry that he is fire. Worry what he did and imitate him. You go ahead and do the same thing. Is lo titasku elo b'matatchila. Go ahead, and the first thing you should do is go do and what the Rabbanu Shalom did and plant the Gan Eden, as it says, kisavo elo aretz, when you'll come to Eretz Yisrael unetatem kol eitz machol. Go ahead and plant a tree. And here I am standing, v'hinei b'shara she'achasti b'yadi et ha'shatil lachniso b'atmas ha'kodesh. Here I am, ready to take a hoe and plant it. I said, my God, niskalti b'divrei rabbeinu zal, I see this medrash coming to light, the Gemara coming to light. V'higashti, literally I feel, she'ani mitabek b'shchina, that I have clung to the Ribbono shel Olam. Tell me, you wouldn't start to shake a charada gedola when this would happen to you? You see, clinging to Rabbanu Shalom with a shovel, you take your 10 hands. That's the way you cling to someone and something. Your 10 fingers, your both hands. Now, yeah, someone else would say like you, Bruce, huh? Sugar, a pie-eyed romanticist. But not if you, you know, not if you understand the man fully. Anyone who redeemed the land, allowed the Jews to have it in their possession, Rav Kook maintained, felt, reacted as if the Rabbono Shel Olam and he were planting Gan Eden together. That's the way it is. That's the reason why Rav Kook tried not to be political. In number 6, Rav Kook was extraordinarily fond of people who belonged to Hapoel HaMizrahi. Mizrahi was a fusion of two groups. One was the European Mizrahi, and the other one was the European Hapoel HaMizrahi. Mm-hmm. They were two social classes. The Mizrahi were the entrepreneurs, the Talmidei Chachomim, the businessmen. Hapoel HaMizrahi, the ones who started the kibbutzim. They were the farmers, they were the workers. So you think that they were the lower class? Nope. Harab he'arich ma'od es Hapoel HaMizrahi. He had tremendous awe for Hapoel HaMizrahi. V'hibia zot yoter ba'alpeh me'asher b'chsav. He didn't write so much about it, but he constantly spoke about it. חברי הפועל המזרחי היו באים אל הרב לשאוב ממנו עידוד רוחני ולהתייעץ עמו. He used to constantly talk to him and get his advice and input. כן פנו אליו בשאלות הנוגעות לפסרון בעיות עבודה וחברה. Work conditions and social conditions. יחזי עובדים ומעבידים. The relationship of employer and employee. לאור התורה ולהלוכה. You see. Those were the ones that were the apple of his eyes. You know why? Because all of this Torah was applied to be able to plant a little sapling. You see. And he loved whenever he had the Paskin Shaila. But when these appeared before him, he was obviously ecstatic.
They never collected, I mean, any of those kind of shilas about the relationship between I mean, are the collections of these are the kinds of questions
sure.
They ask about the relationship between the Rav Kook answer?
In Mishpat Kohen, he's got some. But a full book, I don't know. Yes, but he certainly, you know, he certainly wrote. Now, much of what he paskin was not written down, so we don't have records of it.
Well, he doesn't have Shalish and Shukri.
He does. He has four volumes.
Oh, alright.
But he must have answered infinitely more Shalish and Shukri than that. But he just never wrote it down. He only wrote down those that had to be sent by letter.
I mean, it would be. I could imagine how exciting it would be to know. I mean, what kinds of questions were asked, what kinds of things being answered. I mean, you look.
There's a lot known.
Little.
But. Now, gentlemen, let's take a look at the third page. Again, perspective. The unique perspective of the man. This is a conversation that occurred between one of the generation's greats. This was the Gerer Rebbe, who was the Chassidish head of all of Torah Yiddishkeit, just as the Chofetz Chaim was the head by the Misnagdim. He was on par with the Chofetz Chaim. The Gerer Rebbe came on Aliyah and came to Yerushalayim. So obviously, Rav Kook went to the border, to the borderline of the city, to the city line, to meet him even before he came to Yerushalayim. Lakbil panav liten lo shalom, to give him the right kind of achnasas orchim that such a Torah personality deemed to fit him. B'knisatam la'iyaz nas'u tichlei rechev achad. When they came to the city boundary, they went in the same wagon. Sitchil admur, the Ger Rebbe started to yell and scream about Pritzus Hador. Gevald, gevald, what this generation has come to. Oy lanu, woe unto us, shekachol sovi ameinu, that we had to deserve such a thing in our day. Yerushalayim irat kodesh, shayisa ir shekula chachomim minuvim. In days gone by, Yerushalayim was inhabited only by Talmidei Chachomim and only by Nevi'im. Is today Mitzuyim ba Kalei Olam u'Polkei Ol. Today we have a whole bunch of light-headed jerks, light-headed idiots here.
Who year is this?
Huh? I would have to check. But again, it's within the 16 years that he was in Yerushalayim already. So you're talking about 65 years ago. Shataka Rav, so he keeps quiet. And he changed the subject. As they go ahead and continue their journey to the final destination, they pass the valley called Gei Ben Hinnom. The valley of Ben Hinnom. Makom ze amaharav l'admur, so Rav Kook turns to the Ger Rebbe and says, you see this place? This is the Gei Ben Hinnom that Tanakh talks about. You know what they did here in the days of the Nevi'im? Remember those Nevi'im you were talking about in Yerushalayim? In those days of the Nevi'im, Bnei Yisrael used to go ahead. They would sacrifice their children in the rite of the Molech. B'yameinu, I must tell you that today, we don't have the Nevi'im here, and we don't have the Chachomim, but there isn't one Jew who would even think of worshipping in this Avodah Zarah manner. Hurei B'tuv Yerushalayim. You see, and he took on the biggest. And when he took them on their level. You see. Because Rav Kook realized that there were two things that were necessary. One is emes and the other is shalom. Well, emes v'hashalom mehodim. Take a look at the second selection. When Rav Kook was in America, he addressed massive conglomerations of Jews about achdus ha'om, the unity of people. And obviously, he would always refer to a Chazal. And he went ahead and clarified his point, Masha Amru Chazal. Chazal said, Shechosamo Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu Emes. God's seal, his stamp, his official stamp is Emes. And Shalom is Shmo Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu, is his name. So his official stamp is Emes, and his name is Shalom. Asks Rav Kook, Madua kan chosam v'kan shem? Why is emes a stamp and shalom a name? He says, basic difference. He says, chosam, an official stamp, in order to be effective, mukhachim lahamid kulo b'vasachas, in order for you to go ahead and take a rubber stamp and use it effectively, it must touch the paper and make its impression at one time. Instantly. V'chein ha-emes, and the same thing with emes. Emes is true instantly. But truth isn't the only commodity in this world. Aval shame, the name of a person, any person writing his or her name is kozvim osios osios. You start out with the first letter, then you go to the second, and the third, and the fourth, and the fifth, and you finish the first name. Then you skip a little space, and you start out with the first letter of your last name, and then you go on for 8 or 9 letters until you finish it, letter by letter. Kein HaShalom, the same thing with Shalom. Shemukhrachim af lahagia lidei psharot lema'ano kameya kameya. You have to make certain accommodations and compromises, step by step, little by little, negotiation by negotiation, strategy by strategy, move by move. The only thing is, שיש למצוא את המזיגה בין שני הדברים. You have to find a midpoint where the dynamics, the tension of these two, Emes and Sholem, can come together, לקיים מה שנאמר, so that you understand that life is all a collage of Emes and Sholem together. At times when you need instant integrity, and at times you go piece by piece, little by little. His entire attitude to Shabbos and Kashrus is documented by this Emes and Sholem. There were times when he'd give a scream instantly, stop the Chilul Shabbos, and on the spot it was stopped. And there were other times when he refused to make demonstrations, quietly went and said, let's see and let's wait. Shabbos and Kashrus. Today, any one of those incidents could, at least, at very least, call out a battalion of police, and more probably would create a government crisis, whether on a local or a Knesset national level. His ability to be able to balance these two things and know when it has to have the instant stamp of Emes, one shot, and slow, wait, let's see, put the puzzle together piece by piece, was the genius of the man. Almost, never again to be replicated. Almost.
This putting together of Sholem and Emes, not confusing, but this means that we're supposed to have Emes all the time, and except for one in a few instances when you don't have to have Emes, is when you need Sholem. In order to get some bias, you can talk for MS.
100%.
That's the almost.
I say, I don't know that there is almost no one today that I would say has the same co-op to blend with the effects that this man had.
It didn't sound like you were saying that the first time. The first time you said, like, it's almost never been almost.
No,
that there is.
It's a rare commodity. Uh-oh. A rare commodity that I don't know that can be duplicated again. To have such a powerful individual and be able to control these two things and juggle these two things so effectively, it's just unbelievable. Now, I'll give you an example. Number 5 on the page. Hadavar ya bishnat tafresh sadgim. It occurred in the year 5693. That's 53 years ago. Bilel Shabbat achar tefillah was after davening on a Friday night. Harav od lo kiddush, and he didn't make kiddush. All of a sudden, you hear running and screaming from the courtyard. Umibein chaburat yudim sheitasfu, and you see a whole bunch of Jews yelling and screaming. Is Sa'ad Yehudi Echad, one comes forward and confronts Rav Kook, yelling out, Yelech harav itanu limchot, you've got to come to protest that there's a restaurant over there who's being mechal Shabbos, he's cooking and selling his food on Shabbos. The entire congregation around was obviously, if you looked at them, the young ones from Meir She'orim and another community called Botei Ungarn. They were the Hungarian cooperatives. And Nivakesh V'Doresh, they're all yelling and insisting, Gam Harav Yelech, come, we are going to protest, you must come with us. Harav Misarev, he refuses, but promises that he will investigate the matter a little later. No. I ask you, stop right here at this point. What's the scenario? What are these Hungarian hotheads already saying? One word. Sieni. You filthy Zionist, Zionist. Simple as that. And it says it all. Nope. Lahar Shah Kalaf, a little while, is Panah Rav the Talmidor Rav Avram Bik. And he says to him, to his Talmid, who was with him at the house, he says, Nelech Lirok B'Mayinyan, let's now go to see what's doing. He puts on his coat, and they go to the restaurant. But there, on the way, is Pakshu v'Rab Aaron Teitelbaum. Aaron, the Rab Aaron Teitelbaum is from the Teitelbaum family of Satmar and the Turikauta. V'af hu itzareif lahem. When Rab Aaron Teitelbaum saw Rav Kook going, he went with Rav Kook. B'voram l'makom, when they came, is hayta misada skura. The restaurant was already closed. Well, sure, there must have been a riot already. And he closed, but the while he got his chil Shabbos in for an hour. Sha'al haravitz Rav Avram Bik. So he turns to his Talmud. Mamis mispar anashim shayu b'chatzer. He says, you remember the riot that we had by us? How many people were there? Yoter miminyan. More than a minion? So Rav Avram Bik says, obviously, vadai. L'chatzer hayta melaya. Who knows how many minyanim there would have been? It was packed. Ve'er ze alal da'atam she'leichitam. He says, how did they figure that I should come with them, Amar Harav? Ilu banu, if we all came together, v'hamitada ita p'tucha, and the restaurant was open, is hayiti matre beval ha-mitada, I would have to warn him that he is being mechal Shabbos. Ve'ilu lo shama b'kali, and what if he wanted to be stubborn and wouldn't listen? Hayiti mevaisha, I would have obviously had to embarrass him. Because he's a chutzpahnik, not listening to me when I tell him to keep quiet, to stop chilul Shabbos. V'im lo haya shomea gamos, if he wouldn't have then listened, v'hayinu az yoter miminyan anashim, if we were a tzibur of more than a minyan, haya ze chilul haShabbos b'fahesi. This would have been, al pi halacha, a chilul Shabbos b'fahesi, publicly. Hey here, Rabban Teitelbaum, ata, now, הם ישובו לבתי הונגרם ויפיצו את השמועה כי הרב לא הלך למחות על חילול שבת. But wait a minute. Look what you did. You didn't go with those kids, with those hotheads. Now, but they're already back in Mea Shearim and Batei Hungarim. And what are they saying? See? Lousy Tzioni. Chilul Shabbos was occurring. He wouldn't even put himself out and he walked away from it. Hey, Shiva Rav, so Rav Kook said, Rav Aaron, kvar hitragalnu baze, I'm used to such strategy. La'asos dvarim ka'ele b'tzina. And I maintain that whatever has to be done is done quietly. Rav Aaron Teitelbaum v'acharav, Rav Zalman Shach, she'asipur higia ilav. It spread what the thinking of Rav Kook was, is even these kanoim, these zealous extremists, hitpa'alu midiyukei ha'alacha shebehanagat harav, had to admit, though this isn't their way, the man is a calculated halachic personality all the way. They had to admit that truly and honestly, this was a genuine motivation. Now, this is not the case every single time, because we're going to come to a bunch of stories only about Chilul Shabbos. He saw them playing soccer. He walked right up to them in the field and he said, stop the Chilul Shabbos! And they all went home on the spot because of his calculation. This is what we're doing. Huh? And how? They wanted to crawl into a hole in the ground like a gopher. That's the whole point. You looked at his eyes and you became mesmerized. Now, you see, it wasn't only Jews who reacted this way. Not every time. The man didn't have a 100% record. But in item number 6 over here...
I don't understand the story, though. He didn't go because he didn't want the...
He didn't want to go with the...
to be Mechal of Shabbos.
The Farhesia, because the hordes were there.
But wasn't it Mechal of Shabbos the Farhesia with the hordes there? And Mastan or one of the hordes said, don't be open?
Maybe yes and maybe no, but how do you... But you have to give Hasra.
Why do you need a Rav to give Hasra? One of these people gave Hasra.
But that's the whole point.
Other people go knocking at your business and saying, you Shabbos, Shabbos.
Two?
That's Hasra.
So you have to obviously learn that two or three saw it, and they came to incite the rest, and all the rest were going down there.
Right.
Okay?
So more than
until
down there.
Surely. But I, Rav Kook, am not part and parcel of making him a Mechal Shabbos Nefahesia. I wish I could stop you and your hordes and your cohorts from going. I can't. You sure are not going to go ahead and get me to be part of that Tahesia, part of that Sibur. I'll go privately.
Well, instead of being silent, maybe you should have said, look, we've got to speak to him privately, people publicly, it's going to be a problem.
Obviously, that everyone knew his way, and they weren't listening. They weren't listening. And that's when they came to him. See? You and your way are quiet. It's called Shabbos over there. Let's go and let's protest. And he refused to be part of it. Now, we have ample evidence that his way worked. Ample evidence. Not only with Jews, but with Goyim also, who certainly had no reason to have to worry about the man. Take a look at number 6. In the year 5787, Ba Kirkas, the circus of Goyim, came to Yerushalayim. Yeah, it's a circus. Be'erev Shabbat Odiyu, and Erev Shabbat, they let out the word, Shah Kirkas Yatzigam B'Shabbatot, that they're playing on Shabbos. Rav Shapsi Shmueli, who was the secretary, the maskir of Yeshivat Arav, Yeshivat Arav, Merkaz Arav Kuh, comes home from his work on Erev Shabbos, and he sees the signs, the placards, that the circus is going to run. And together with him was Rav Shimshon Shapiro, who was a shamus to the Rav. They all come to the Rav and they tell him about it. It's Harav Masal Lishneim Migeret Macha'ach Harifa LeBalei HaKirkas. He immediately dashes off a very strong letter of protest to the owners of the circus, warning them, Shehadavar Alul Lahavi LeTotzeot Chamurot, that they're going